This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
Across Northern Ireland, on your radio and on BBC Sounds. This is The Stephen Nolan
Show! Hello everyone. Well, I would usually say it's nice to be back, but how can I be positive about anything when we know that there are so many vulnerable people? NIE telling us today, 1,500 people still who are in the vulnerable category without power. Many tens of thousands of other homes still without power. But our focus this morning is on those people who are in that vulnerable category. And if their electric's not going to be back on, possibly as late as the 3rd of February, what are we doing about it? What more can we do? And that's not just challenging Stormont, that's challenging us in the community. So people need help and they need it quickly. And there will be people today, as you're listening to this programme, who know they're going to be sitting in the pitch dark tonight. One woman will tell us that food is gone, heat comes first now, and she can't get it. All coming up this morning. The Stephen Nolan Show! Good morning. It's nice to be back with you. Our focus this morning is for the vulnerable, including the babies, the elderly, currently sitting in pitch darkness, no light, no heat.
7th of
the
January.
The Nolan Show can tell you that there are 1,500 homes designated as vulnerable, still without power. We can also tell you that 150 generators have been deployed by NIE in Northern Ireland, but that they are waiting for a further 300. They've ordered another 300 and they are on their way across the water, from across the water. Now, this has been an unprecedented situation, but there are questions around how ready were we for this? Should there, for example, have been more generators bought as contingency sitting in Northern Ireland ready to go? But as I've just said, think about this morning. 1,500 homes designated as including very vulnerable people. That means the very young, that means the disabled, that means the sick, that means the very elderly. Some of those people in pitch darkness with no light and no heat. And NIE are saying that they can only commit to fixing all homes by the 3rd of February. So obviously our question to the Stormont authorities this morning is what all can be done to make sure everything is being done to get those people who are currently sitting in pitch darkness and freezing. What can be done to look after them? Now, what we're going to do this morning is speak to NIE. But we did hear the First Minister, Michelle O'Neill, tell Sarah Brett this morning on Good Morning Ulster that she needs the community to help in the interim.
In the Republic, they've set up a kind of a humanitarian group as part of the emergency response, you know, that's at government level, if you like, or certainly at national level as part of the National Emergency Coordination Group. Do we need to do something like that here?
We have the similar group. We have a group set up that's actually dealing specifically with vulnerable people. And that's coming at it from a whole joined up point of view. That's working with our councils. Our leisure centres are opened. People can call in, you know, for showers, charging facilities, getting a cup of tea, just getting a wee bit of heat into them. And we're also looking at what else we can do around community resilience. But very much at these times, you're very much dependent on that wider community effort, which I know is very much alive here. People are very genuine and would be very concerned about their neighbours this time, and we ask people just to take this opportunity to look out for those people as well.
So what if there is someone that doesn't have a neighbour that's coming round to help? Our thoughts are with them this morning, and we're going to be continually asking the executive what is being done. And look, a lot is being done. We'll speak to the Education Minister, Paul Given, later on the programme today to get the upshot of where schools are and what he is doing. But first, let's speak to NIE. Alex Houston is the Network Operations Manager with NIE. I asked him for the latest number of homes affected.
Yeah, so look, Storm Eowyn rolled into Northern Ireland on Friday the 24th and caused extensive damage through from about 4 a.m. through to 2 p.m. Obviously, the red warning was in place for that time. We saw wind speeds of up to 98 miles per hour, I think was the strongest wind speed recorded. And look, it's been a completely unprecedented, it's the largest event that we've ever experienced in Northern Ireland. There were 285,000 customers, so that's about 30% of our entire customer base off at the peak of the event. As of this morning, there is about 65,000 customers off, so we've managed to restore power to 220,000 customers as of this morning. So just in the sense of, to give you some sense of scale, the previous largest event, which some of your listeners might remember, was the Boxing Day storm in 1998. There were 165,000 customers impacted by that. So this is a doubling of that. And it's obviously, so you've seen extensive damage in the news over recent days in terms of forests being knocked down, trees being ripped out of the ground, and even some of our brand new electricity poles just being snapped in half.
And so that was one of the basic questions I wanted to ask. We know how powerful the wind has been. What has cut the electric supply? Is it the lines being pulled down to the ground, the poles not being able to withstand the wind pressure, or what predominantly has cut the supply to this extent?
Yeah, so look, it's a mixture of things. It's trees being ripped out of the ground. It's forests falling down. There's been poles blown over, windborne debris, roads impassable. So, look, we've seen over 4,000 individual damage locations that we're working through. So, I suppose when we saw this was forecast, obviously we have an emergency plan which kicks into action. Unfortunately, over recent years, we've had to use it maybe more than we would like, and some people have been affected by Storm Dara this last month. So, what happens in that plan is that we mobilised our teams there on Friday morning. We deployed immediately after the red alert was lifted, and everyone has a dual role in the company. So everyone, everyone has been pulled into a role, whether it's call handling, out in the field, runners, logistics, whatever it may be. So it's really a whole of company effort now to work through to get the very last customer restored.
So was there contingency planning, Alex, in place, well before now, last year before, planning out something like this?
Yeah. So that emergency plan that I referred to is we've used it for over 30 years now, since the Boxing Day storm, actually, of 1998. And look, that's where we take our staff, we deploy them into local districts, we decentralise things so as we can action that faster. Everyone in the company stands down from their normal planned work. And we go systematically after the fault. So what we tend to do is we go after the dangerous situations first to assess those, to make them safe. We then try to restore customers remotely from our control centre here in Craigavon, and then we go after the faults in terms of the high voltage network, where one repair could bring on maybe 500 customers. But as we go down now through the and further into the event, as we're restoring faults maybe into our LV network, restoring or repairing one pole rather might only bring on 10 customers at a time. So it's hard. Repairs take as long, but you don't get as much gain from them in terms of customers restored. So I really appreciate that this is a really frustrating situation for customers, and really want to acknowledge how difficult it is. But want to offer my commitment and our commitment to the people of Northern Ireland, that we're doing everything we can.
Well, look, what I want to try to understand, you'll recognise here that what I'm doing is I'm dwelling at the moment on the planning phase. Mm-hmm. So what I'm trying to understand is, we knew this storm was coming. The Republic of Ireland had a red weather warning from Wednesday. So mm-hmm. they knew it was coming. That was a heads up to us. Why did we wait until after the storm to bring people in from England? Why were those people not brought over and ready to go?
Yeah, no, we have a well tried and tested mutual aid arrangement with our colleagues right across the, I suppose, the whole British Isles, really. But what we tend to do then there is we reach out in the days before, as we did at this time. Everyone sees, you know, the weather warnings extended right into England, and indeed we had that event on the Friday storm. I think it was Hermania, came in yesterday and it affected the south of England. So you can understand. I think everyone will understand that the each area has to prioritise their own repairs first. So our sister companies in England, Scotland, Wales are starting to get on top of their damage. That's why we're seeing staff now rolling off the boats.
So when did we ask for those staff to come to Northern Ireland?
Yeah, we put that request in on Thursday, absolutely. In fact, on Wednesday, actually, to get them here. But obviously they were predicting widespread damage and they have received widespread damage in the British Isles as well.
Let's look then, Alex, please, at where we're currently at. So my home's been out of power for a number of days, and it doesn't really matter because I'm fit, I'm healthy. I sat in pitch darkness and the cold for 36 hours. It's not going to do me any harm. My home is still not restored. It doesn't matter. It does not matter. My thoughts this morning, as I know yours will be, to those elderly people who are sitting in a home in the pitch dark and freezing. So are they being prioritised?
Yeah, so what we do in a situation like this, again, we go back to our plan. So we have a vulnerable customer team. We have two ways of that being activated. We have a medical customer care register, so people who are registered with us, who might have oxygen tanks, who might have medical equipment in their homes. So we're reaching out to those that we know are off. We're also receiving calls in from other people, elderly people, people with young children. So we do prioritise those people, and we're calling them all back. We're prioritising, and we are deploying generators to some genuinely life threatening situations. We're sending out our meter reading staff to go and do home visits and provide some. So, and we're also sorry.
So if you have a list of those people registered as vulnerable, how many vulnerable people are still without power?
Yeah, so look, we have worked through from the peak of this about 1,500 vulnerable customers. And that's a big number, but it's a sense of the scale of the overall size of this event. So 30% of the customers in Northern Ireland were off supply at a point in time in this. So that number will continue to come down. We'll continue to contact them and reprioritise.
But you have sorted 1,500 vulnerable people.
I'm saying, there was 1,500 in total right now. So we're working through that list, absolutely.
There are 1,500 people still without power who are classified as vulnerable.
That's correct, yes. And I suppose we're continuing to work through that, reprioritise it. We're working with our partners. It's a real multi-agency approach. So we're working with the health social care trusts. We have through the councils in that relationship. There are 11 community assistance centres and over 50 drop-in clinics open today. And as well as that, then we have, as I mentioned, our generators. We're reaching out to the community and voluntary sector as well.
So of those 1,500 people who are still without power, how many generators have you sent out to the vulnerable category?
Yeah, we have around 150 generators out in the field, and we're expecting delivery of more again through those mutual aid relationships.
When?
Some of them are on the boat today. They'll be delivered today. The more will come in as we progress.
How many have been ordered?
300 have been requested in total, and that's what we're working again through with our partners to see those delivered.
You say, Alex, and look, I get the scale of this, I am not trying to be clever here, but what I'm trying to do is represent to you what this programme hears from the public. So the position that you have presented today is that in that vulnerable category, you're reaching out to people. When they reach out to you, you respond and you do all that you can. Mm-hmm. I want to read to you an email that the Nolan Show has, and we believe this person's going to, that one of the family members of this person may come on the Nolan Show this morning. Mm-hmm. And he says, my mom is 78 years of age, has motor neuron disease, has been left without electricity since early Friday morning. She's been on the Northern Ireland Electricity Care Register for more than 10 years, is dependent on electric to provide mm-hmm. her airflow hospital bed, charge her electric wheelchair, charge her hoist to transfer her from bed, run her oil-fired central heating, power her electric cooker and electric shower for washing. Since Friday, 12 calls for assistance have been made to NIE, to which all the responses I've been left with is the supply will be restored by the 3rd of February at the latest. My vulnerable mother has spent 2 days and nights in her wheelchair, which is not designed to be left in. Her mattress has deflated, cannot be used. She's now got pressure sores, which have led to the out-of-hours GP and district nurses having to attend to treat those sores. I'm at the end of my tether, dealing with watching my mum's health slowly deteriorate, which could end up in an unwanted hospital admission. Please, can someone help me? And there's a 78-year-old woman, desperate.
Yeah, look, that does sound like a very difficult situation, and really, really want to sympathise with that, and I'm really happy to take that away and look into it as a priority. If we can get the details afterwards, really happy to do that.
The question is, how many more like that are out there? We know within our team that if you contact NIE by text, you get an auto reply quoting this date of the 3rd of February.
No, we absolutely are ringing people back. So I do apologise if this particular person has experienced that, but we absolutely are ringing back. We have contacted those 1,500 customers, as I say. We're prioritising
in person.
Yes, through phone calls. Yes, we have a team set up, that vulnerable customer team. Absolutely, we have 120. Call handlers in our call handling contact centre, social media as well. So, we had, I think, 68,000 calls on Saturday alone, which compares to the most recent storm there, Storm Dara, where there was 35,000 over 4 days. So, I'm very happy to take that one away.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Come back to you.
Have we learning out of this? In that you have 150 generators, you're having to bring in 300 more. Does Stormont need to fund these generators to be here so that there is as little time delay in the future as possible? This is likely to happen again, isn't it? And again and again. What's the learning from this?
Well, look, there absolutely will be learnings. There's learnings after every storm, and we learn from those and implement them into our plan. But I suppose my job as network operations manager is to focus right now on the restoration, getting that additional resource in, and prioritising.
Should we have had that resource on the ground, already bought, ready to go?
Well, look, we have, as I said already, I think we put in those requests earlier, and we're seeing that now coming across. There's over 64 staff already here, or on transit, and there'll be more coming as the week progresses. So, look, my priority, as I say, is to really focus on that restoration. That no doubt there'll be lessons to be learned, and I do want to learn them, and we want to learn them. But that's for after the event.
And are you sticking to the? Look, the questions here are basic because I know what people will be asking. They'll be simply asking, when is this going to be over? When will all houses be restored by? Are you sticking to the 3rd of February? And can you guarantee, if there's no more weather impact, mm-hmm. that everything will be restored by the 3rd of February? And why the 3rd of February?
So, look, I suppose we've lots of experience of storms and seeing the amount of damage and customers off. Obviously, this completely unprecedented, as I mentioned before, but in our experience, our best.
Well, obviously, we've got a technical problem there, and the tape has stopped on us. But that's the operations manager for NIE, Alex Houston. To be fair to them, it's a massive, massive task that they have. What we're trying to do today is step through what is being done and what isn't being done. So let's hear now from the Education Minister, Paul Given. I asked Paul how things are as of this morning.
Well, the storm has had a huge impact right across Northern Ireland, and it is, in terms of the school estate, over 150 reports of damage has come in. That ranges from roof tiles that have been dislodged, trees that have fallen, but also significant structural damage. And we have 10 schools unable to open today as a result of that structural damage that has been caused. We have teams that have been working over the weekend carrying out essential repairs, and I would hope that number would reduce to three on Tuesday, and we will seek to provide support to those three. But of significant concern has been the number of schools that still remain without power. After the storm, there were over 300 schools that we knew were disconnected from the electricity supply. And today, that is still at around 80 schools that do not have any power, and therefore they are unable to open.
Were schools prioritised by NIE after you put in that request?
Well, we provided them with information because we know from the servers that schools are operating on whenever they are down, it is the C2K network. So we could tell with accuracy the schools that didn't have power. We have supplied that list to schools. And over the course of the past 48 hours, NIE have been reconnecting schools. And that number of 300 had reduced to just over 50. But then the strong winds that came through Northern Ireland yesterday pushed that figure back up again to around 80 schools. So we're working with NIE. We've provided them with that information. They have assured us that they are prioritising those reconnections for schools, because that has a knock-on effect in terms of the children it's impacting, but also for the families concerned and around childcare arrangements and their workers that need to be able to be in, some of them emergency workers that are out responding to those people that still need help. So I've asked NIE to prioritise the reconnections of these schools, and that number will increase in terms of those connections today. And schools are communicating that at a local level, because the numbers fluctuate. As schools change to the connection system, then school leaders are best placed to provide that information to parents. They've been doing that through their normal communication channels, and that will continue to be the way that information is put out there.
So how many schools are closed at the moment today?
Well, I came off a call late last night with my officials in the department, and also the Education Authority, who are coordinating the response. And we had around 80 schools that were not connected to the power supplies, and we had 10 schools unable to open. So it's a significant number haven't been able to open this morning. But that is being communicated directly from the school leaders to those parents.
It's maybe me being stupid, but you say 80 schools don't have electric, but only 10 are closed. So how are the schools functioning that don't have electric?
No, they are closed. Sorry, if I wasn't clear.
It's me being stupid, probably.
If you don't have electric, you're not able to open.
Yeah.
And so, last night when I came off that call, I knew we were going into a situation where around 90 schools wouldn't be able to open today. But
okay,
the precise number, because schools, some will have came online overnight. So some of those schools that I was being advised still hadn't power late last night may have got reconnected.
Right.
And that's why the communication of the specific schools are being provided. But Stephen, if I can take the opportunity to first of all acknowledge it's been a hugely challenging weekend for the school leaders. They have been out on the site working with my department, providing us with information, and I want to acknowledge that, as well as the people who have been carrying out that essential work, because the overwhelming majority of schools have been able to open today, And that's as a result of the hard work of many people.
But as of last night, look, you were looking at a situation where 90 schools were closed, and you don't know how many have been reconnected between last night and this morning. I think the question that parents will have, because they're trying to get to work, they need to stay off work, or they need to put in place childcare arrangements, as you know. Have you got any indicative guidance from NIE as to when it is likely that all schools will be open again?
Well, we are working with NIE to get the prioritisation that we need for schools to be put back on again. And as that occurs, the schools will know that their systems are operational. Are they able to open up? And they will communicate that directly to parents. And they have been doing that at that local level. So I have asked for a priority to be given by NIE for the reconnection of these schools. You know, they had been, the figure had been down to nearly just 50 yesterday, but then the winds came through and there were more disconnections that took place,
no,
and that has hampered the recovery.
Nobody can do anything about that. But the practical question, Paul, for parents is how long are they likely to need to provide childcare for? Is there, because I like, given I've been hearing this from abroad, but you know, some people saying that it might take 10 days for their homes to be restored and things. Is there any guidance whatsoever that you've been given? For example, will all schools likely be open by the end of the week?
Well, this is where I've asked for support as well, that as schools are reconnected, if there are those who we think are unable to be connected, can we get generators in place? We've been requesting that, and that is something that we have asked for. So, listen, the teams are working closely with our school leaders. We had over nearly 300 school principals online yesterday evening with the Education Authority. We've been providing them with information. We are supporting them. But we are at the mercy of how quickly NIE can carry out the reconnection work. That requires that specific expertise by them to do that. We're liaising with NIE, and as those schools get reconnected, that information is being communicated by the school leaders.
Would you ask those school leaders to at least communicate, each school to communicate with parents? I think one of the basic questions parents will have is they'll understand you can't do anything about the weather, but they will expect you to take leadership in terms of information flow to ultimately to parents. And that's why you're on these programs this morning, to be fair to you. Would you ask the principals to tell the parents what it's looking like?
Yes, and obviously, you know, that has been happening. You know, schools regularly communicate through the channels that they use in any normal situation. That information has been provided to advise parents of the schools that were unable to open today, and that will continue to be the case. So as schools get reconnected, the schools will advise parents, you know, when they are able to open. And we are working with NIE. We've provided them with all of the information. They know the schools that don't have power. We've had to provide that information to NIE. I've asked them to give priority because of the ripple effect that it has, not just in children not being educated in the normal environment, but also in terms of having the workers able to be in their own workplace.
Have they agreed to give schools, because there will be lots of pools in NIE, have they agreed to give schools priority, for example, over care homes, for example, over hospitals, or where is education in the pecking order?
Well, they have agreed that this is a priority when it comes to reconnection. But NIE, you know, they need to speak to how they're responding to this. We have engaged with them right across all of the public services. And, you know, in the first instance, you know, getting critical public infrastructure working was vital. We had some hospitals running on generators, and you have then those vulnerable elderly people in their homes needing to be supported. So obviously that gets first priority, but we're in the recovery phase now where we need to be getting other connections in place, and we are working to do that. So, you know, we shouldn't underestimate the significance of the damage caused by this storm. You know, we warned before the storm came in that it was going to be significant. That transpired to be the case, and I want to thank the public for listening to those messages. You know, we thankfully didn't have a loss of life and in terms of injury as well. But now we need to respond, and we are very much in that recovery phase, and work continues to try and get normal services resumed. But this has been a significant impact. And just to give you some context, over nearly 2,500 obstructions on our roads, 70 trees on the M2 alone needed to be removed. You know, 30% of all connections were lost across Northern Ireland. That's hundreds of thousands of connections weren't in place for domestic and businesses. You know, so this has been significant. So it is taking some time, but right across the executive, we have been coordinating and collaborating our resources, sharing of that resource, and with local councils opening up community centres to provide support. And families and friends have responded, and you know, it shows the spirit that exists in Northern Ireland that when people are in need, often people go above and beyond, and I want to thank those people that have done that.
Is the repair bill coming out of your budget?
Well, I have made clear to my officials that whatever resource necessary we need to be spending to make sure that we get normal services resumed.
Is this not costing a fortune? How are you affording this?
Well, you can't have schools closed, and therefore there has to be that urgent response. What I have asked my department is to make sure they record these costs specifically to do with the storm. I raised this in the executive meetings that within my own department's budget, there isn't the funding there to cover the costs
that
we are
point.
Now incurring.
So that's my point. So have you been given an assurance by that wider executive that they will cover the costs of this so that ultimately, when everything's better again, children are not suffering? Because you've just said, which I guess, you didn't have the money to pay for this. So have they given you that assurance?
Well, yes, and in that I raised it specifically at the executive about the need for financial resource. The executive collectively is engaging on this. It'll be led by the finance minister. But one of the
is engaging asks, or you confirmed they will cover the cost?
Well, Stephen, I'm incurring the cost. So there is no limit on what I am doing when it comes to the cost.
I get that, but have they given you a commitment that education will not suffer? You couldn't, you didn't have the money in the first place. Or is that up in the air?
Resources are not going to be an inhibitor to getting normal services resumed. How we navigate the way in which that cost is covered is something that we do need to address. That's sure. Why the spend on this is being specifically recorded associated with the storm. I have escalated that and raised it at executive level. The finance minister is also going to be engaging on this with the Treasury, because this is a significant storm that affected Northern Ireland and Scotland in particular. That's why it requires a UK-wide response, engaging with the Prime Minister.
I want to ask you about that specifically, but just before I do so, have you any reckoning as to what the cost is so far on the repair bill?
Those costs are being collated as...
Is it tens of millions?
I don't have a particular figure yet. It is too early to know what is being spent, but we know it will be significant, not just in education, but the response to this storm is going to be significant by way of the financial implications for the executive. That's why we need a national response to support us.
Will insurance policies cover it? Is the school estate insured?
In some circumstances, the schools that are under the controlled estate, they are taxpayer covered, and that is going to be something that the taxpayer has to cover. There are other schools that may have insurance policies in place, and that is something that will be explored. But we're not waiting to get to the bottom of those issues when it comes to carrying out the works that are necessary to get schools open
that.
And running properly.
I hear that loud and clear. You mentioned, Minister, the UK government. And I guess this is a test, an unfortunate test, but a test, albeit, that has happened. How quick were the UK government to reach out to offer help to Northern Ireland? Did they reach out to Stormont, or did you have to go asking?
We have had to ask, and the response has now been coming.
You've had to ask?
I was.
They didn't offer help?
Well, In the executive meeting that we were discussing the response, I highlighted the need for a national response to this that was shared by all of the ministers, because there will be financial implications, but also when it comes to accessing mutual aid and support, which we have been receiving, and that engagement has taken place. The First and Deputy First Minister have spoken with the Prime Minister. There have been COBRA meetings operating, and support is coming. But you know, we went to the UK government in that respect. I spoke with my own party leader, Gavin Robinson, about this. He engaged with the Secretary of State, Hilary Benn, to ensure that the UK government would be responsive in supporting the executive, and that has been happening as a result of that intervention.
But just to be clear, because the storm was predicted, we knew Northern Ireland was in trouble in terms of what was coming our way. And the Secretary of State, Hilary Benn, for Northern Ireland, did not reach out and contact Stormont. What was the time delay? How long was it until Stormont had to say, well, they haven't contacted us, we need to contact them? Was it hours? Was it days?
Well, I'm not sure the precise time, but it was something that I raised in terms of ensuring that we got resource from right across the United Kingdom, and that we needed to ensure that the UK government were going to be supporting the Northern Ireland executive. And, you know, we reached out to the UK government. I engaged with Gavin Robinson. He directly spoke with Hilary Benn and was assured that, you know, the UK government would support the Northern Ireland executive. And that will be important, not just in terms of the immediate recovery, and there has been support coming, but this also requires ongoing support from the UK government to provide particularly that financial resource that will be necessary to meet the costs of recovery.
It was surreal for me, Paul. I was walking around California in shorts, watching the desperate weather that there was here. And what I was intrigued to see was that after the storm had happened, people were travelling from England, additional support was travelling from England to come to Northern Ireland to help. Why was that resource not in place? Why were those people not transferred to here from England, ready to go? And was that the responsibility of NIE? Did Stormont ask, where are these people? We're definitely going to need extra help.
Well, our protocols were put in place before the storm came in, and it was escalated in terms of a gold command response because of the threat to life. The PSNI led on that. That is now moved to recovery phase. So the Department for Infrastructure is leading across the executive in respect of this. So there was preparation was being put in, and obviously the storm had a significant impact.
Which was expected.
Therefore, engineers have come over as a result of mutual aid requests.
After the storm happened. I'm asking this question on behalf of old people still sitting without electric. I'm asking this question on behalf of all of those many tens of thousands of homes still without electric. And a gold command structure didn't make sure that support was brought over as a contingency before the storm happened. We waited for it to happen. We waited for the damage to occur, and then we needed to wait for people to come over.
Well, I think the storm also hit the Republic of Ireland severely. 750,000 homes lost power.
They had the red warning listed a week before us.
It hit the north of England, and it also hit Scotland, Stephen. So I think when you know, there will always be introspection and review of the processes whenever it comes to it, and hindsight people can look at these things. But right now we're in that recovery phase. We are drawing upon all of the resources possible, and we've stood up all of the protocols necessary, and I think the executive has been responding to that. We've collaborated across government at all levels, and we've had council workers being utilised by the Department for Infrastructure to clear roads, to cut up those trees. So there has been a huge amount of work put in place to respond. But absolutely, we need to make sure that until every last connection is put in place, that we're supporting those people that require that support.
Just a couple more questions. Let me come back to children. I also acknowledge that this is one of the real examples of multi-agency approaches the government often quotes. But have we any idea how many vulnerable children are sitting in homes freezing in the cold weather? Do we know? Is the executive asking questions about that and doing something about it? Those homes without electric in the freezing cold.
Well, we know where people are vulnerable. You know, the health trusts know where people are. And I want to thank those domiciliary care workers in particular and others who went out during this weather, who have been out navigating, you know, obstructions on roads to make sure that they were providing that support. So, yes, you know, the health trusts know where people that are vulnerable that require support. But this is where we've stood up those community support hubs, where people have been responding and providing that support as well at a local level, and the connections have been taking place. So we're doing all that we can, responding to this as effectively as possible, and we will continue to do that. Stephen, this executive meeting is starting in 5 minutes, and I need to brief FM, DFM, and
that's
my own officials.
That's
no problem. I need to jump on the call. All right, sorry.
Thank you so much for all your time, Minister. We appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Stephen.
So we recorded that just before we came on air this morning. Samuel's in Belfast. Morning, Samuel.
Morning, Stephen.
Good morning. Tell us the situation about your mum.
Well, my mother is the 78-year-old woman with motor neuron disease who's been left with no electric since Friday morning and absolutely zero response.
So that's who I was talking to the NIE rep about. It's your mum.
Yes, exactly. Yep. That's correct.
And so we understand someone did phone you back, is that right?
A manager from the call centre phoned me back personally from his own mobile phone, basically to reassure me that there was nothing basically they could do. They had no resources to put in place to try and alleviate my mother's suffering at the minute.
So tell me about your mum and the situation she's in, Samuel.
So she's 78 years of age. She's been diagnosed with motor neuron disease. She's a vulnerable person. I've been on the lists for many years. There's no means of washing. There's no means of cooking in the house. There's no means of real heat in the house. And for the last, since Friday morning, she's basically been sitting in the dark. And she's just there. Now she's developed some pressure sores that are starting to come through, which is a concern for myself and the rest of the family.
So obviously the electricity feeds the hoist, which lifts your mum out of bed.
It runs the airflow hospital mattress, the adjustable bed, everything in the house, the charge, the electric wheelchair, the cook, the electric shower. And we've been told nothing apart from a text message that said power will be restored before the 10 p.m. on the 3rd of February, and I've even been out today for the last 2 hours trying to hire a generator myself personally, and there's nothing available. And I've had literally zero response from NIE, apart from, we can't tell you any different, apart from it's going to be 10 days before we get you back online.
So that would be your mother left in a wheelchair, in a sitting position for 10 days.
It's not so bad now because the hoist is a battery charge, so I can take the battery away and charge it in my house.
Okay.
So she's able to transfer from her bed, but she's on a solid mattress at the minute rather than the specialist airflow mattress.
And she's got bed sores now.
Yeah, she's pressure sores.
We take power for granted, don't we?
We do. Totally reliant on it. And power was restored to my mum's area on Saturday afternoon, except the power line is down that feeds my mum's house. It's lying in the hedge, and nobody's been out to look at it. Nobody's been anywhere near it.
Well, look, you heard Alex Houston on. Alex is the network operations manager with NIE.
Yep.
We just need to know if you give us permission. To hand your number to them, but he has personally said that, and NIE have been back on to us a number of times now, asking for your number to see if they can help in any way.
Yep.
So, do you want us to pass that on?
Definitely. Just make sure that they don't phone me from a withheld number because it'll not get through to my phone.
Oh, listen, we're the same here at Radio Ulster. Withheld numbers.
Yep. That's why I had to phone you back, Stephen.
Yeah, no, I know. When we try to phone out, people have these lockers on and it doesn't get through.
Indeed.
So I guess people should be aware of that when they're contacting us here at the BBC, actually, that if they've got that software where a withheld number, there's no point in ringing in because when we ring out, you can't see us.
Yeah.
We've been trying to get... go ahead.
I'm getting slowly more and more worried about my mother. She has a very stoic attitude at the moment, but it quite possibly could go downhill very quickly. She was in hospital last year after suffering from pressure sores that got infected, and it was a very scary time.
Well, look, let's see if we can at least help better communication between you and NIE. I think they'll be on the phone with you very, very quickly here. And sure, we'll follow that up with you, Samuel, and see how your mum is. And thanks for contacting us.
I appreciate your time, Stephen. Thank you very much.
Not a problem. Thank you. Fred and Dromore. Morning, Fred.
Hello. Hi, Ian. It's good to have you back.
Thank you.
Well, I think the NIE are doing as good a job as they can do. For the public has a notice of this for several days, and they could have taken precautions. And I mean, I live in a rural area. I live between 500 and 600 feet, and I live on my own, and I took precautions. I made enough food the day before to do it at least 2 to 3 days.
Yeah, but it's hard. It's hard. What are you saying here?
Pardon?
What are you saying here? Are you saying people haven't prepared themselves enough? Like, you cannot, if you're vulnerable at the start.
But what now? What do you mean by vulnerable?
What do you mean? What do I mean by vulnerable? If you're a lady with motor neuron disease who we've just heard about.
Yes, but that's okay. Well, I heard her son saying, the family. Well, sure, could the family not take her home to their house? He said he was going to get batteries charged for her. Well, he could take her home to his house.
She needs a specialist bed.
Well, you could take the bed too.
Could
you? To be taken to her house.
All right, how do you lift a specialist bed? It's just, look, what you're doing is making a number of presumptions in order to criticise that man that was just on.
I'm not taking any presumptions. He said the family, so there must have been more family than he.
Right, okay.
So he was, they got the bed to your house, sure it could be moved again.
Oh, right, okay, just like that.
And I could see more and more people are not looking after their aged parents for some unknown reason.
Wow. It is just ridiculous for that man to phone us and you without any information about that family, their circumstances. He's phoning us to try to help his mum. He's phoned NIE 12
right.
times, and you're making a whole list of presumptions about the family now. In fact, I think Samuel... here's Samuel. Samuel wants to speak to you. Morning, Samuel.
Good morning. I am absolutely infuriated by somebody's attitude. That my mother has lived and had to pay for herself a specially adapted bungalow to live in.
Yes.
I just can't lift a specialised hospital bed and move it. There's certain widths of doors, there's double doors fitted to my mother's house for her mobility needs. It's just not as simple as lifting a bed, putting it on a trailer and taking it down the road. Not everybody's house is disabled, adapted to suit my mother.
She lives in a specialist house then?
She lives in a specialist house. She requires specialist care that is provided by the health trust. And it needs electricity to run. You just can't lift her. There's no respite places. There's nowhere to take her to. So for you to come on and say, just take it. There's myself and my sister. We both work frontline work. Frontline posts for the community.
Pardon?
We both work for the community.
Right.
We both
but you're your mother's part
jobs.
Of the community.
Pardon?
Your mother's part of the community.
I know she's part of the community, but there is no, at this precise moment in time, I can't do any more for my mother than I am doing. The health trust.
Well, you always heard the saying, charity begins at home.
Fred, I think. Yeah.
You not think I've taken the last 3 days off after working through the storm myself to look after and care my mother?
Look, we said at the top of the programme today, our focus very much is on now those people who are still vulnerable. And to be fair, Paul Given has said that they are looking at all a range of matters of helping children and get back into schools. We've heard Michelle O'Neill, the First Minister, acknowledge that they're vulnerable people and saying that we need community support here. I'm not sure, you're entitled to your opinion, Fred, but I'm not sure you just spewing out ill-informed comments about a family when you don't know that family's situation is the best approach. David in Belfast. Morning, David.
Hi, Stephen. I just want to make a point that a couple of years ago, BT had a huge push for full fibre, which is totally reliant on electricity and the internet. During the power cut, quite a few friends of mine, by having no internet, have no telephones or any system to get messages to or from themselves.
So most telephones are running off Wi-Fi?
Yes. All landlines, particularly in the Ballyclare, Carrickfergus area, have been replaced to be Wi-Fi based.
That's a really interesting point. So those people are, what you're saying is those people are down. No
completely,
electric.
Yes.
No electric.
If they have no electric, they have no, unless they have a mobile with a good signal, and a lot of the rural areas between Carrickfergus, Ballyclare and Larne, there's no signal.
Still, this morning?
Yeah, well, there's no internet this morning, but I say if you're living in a certain area, you don't get reception. They're basically black areas where there's no responder anywhere or transponder anywhere near you.
You see, as a whole, David, do you think Stormont have done as much as they can? And that's a genuinely open question, because I've been away, so I'm coming back into this.
They did give us a warning on Thursday, Friday. It's again, I suppose, it's the old worry about how bad is it going to be, and then when they say it's going to be bad, they did give us a bit of a warning.
Well, let's hope these generators, we heard from NIE this morning that there's another 300 generators ordered on their way over.
Again, one of the bits, Steve, you were saying earlier on about the schools.
Yeah.
How do the schools contact the parents of the children if there's no electricity? Is it through mobiles? And again, does that mean that every person or every family must have their own mobile?
Can the community do more here? Can neighbours do more?
It has to be left to neighbours. But again, if you're in a school...
And the First Minister is in that interview with Sarah on Good Morning Ulster was saying, look, we're relying here on a lot of community support.
Yeah, absolutely, yes. I do believe that the community is very important, but the real terms is, does the school have phone numbers for neighbours, relatives, as well as the pupils themselves?
And then those of us that have all these, we think we were being clever or modern, whatever you want to say, these interconnected homes where everything's linked up via Wi-Fi, via the internet. Well, my power was off. I have electric blinds, so I had no daylight. My blinds were stuck down. There was no heating, pitch darkness, didn't have a torch. All those things that your mother would have. She's a torch in a drawer. She's one upstairs, one downstairs. So all this modern technology now, the electric goes off, David, we're screwed.
Absolutely.
Well, listen, thank you. Thank you.
No problem.
Teresa and Ballantyre, 03030805555. Morning, Teresa.
Morning, Stephen. How are you?
I'm doing Stephen, all right, thank you.
You weren't here, but the South of Ireland give a red a warning for the storm, right?
Mm-hmm.
England were on an amber warning. What did they do? They put Northern Ireland on an amber warning. The rest of Ireland was red. We were sitting in the middle on amber. Did this storm know that there was a border?
Well, apparently last week this was explained, I'm being told by the team here, that Met Erin and the Met Office used different metrics.
But still, it's an island, Stephen. Anybody with a brain...
Yes, but they used different metrics to define red or not.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. Still, if it was coming into Ireland, a storm, it wasn't going to sweep over the top of Ulster and go on down south. It was an island. We're one island. We're not sitting out a wee bit on our own.
Are you warm?
Yes, I'm grand, thank God. My electric never was off.
Good.
Thank God. But there's a lot of people, yes, in a hard way. But a lot of people don't think about, they need all electric. Why about gas? We had a wee backup of gas.
Teresa,
like that.
Thank you very much. I'm just sitting here thinking that this is a test, isn't it? for all of us, including me, including you, whoever you are, as to what we actually mean if we think we're part of the community. So are we prepared to think about the elderly people, whether it's in our street or it takes a car ride to them, to make sure they're all right? And that's about families that sometimes don't talk to each other. That's about old friends. And that's about elderly people, making sure that they are all right as there continues to be a wait and NIE working their way through the carnage that has happened. 030 30 80 55 55, and all the workers that are out in the cold and the snow and overnight trying to get this all together for us again. I think, Barry, you're making that point, right? Morning to you.
I'm making the point, yes. There are plenty of people out there working their guts out to get things done.
Yeah.
I have a very good friend who works for the water service. I called yesterday morning just as a courtesy call and discovered he was spending his whole Sunday morning trying to get generators from England, get them on the ground. And, you know, it's impossible to get them from England, get them on the ground, get vans to deliver them out to all these places and have them connected for 10 o'clock this morning. It just doesn't happen. As a farmer, we make plans for the things coming. In hindsight, we could say we should have done more. But you have to deal with what comes in front of you, whether it's roofs coming off. I know brand new houses that have lost slates. You can't plan for that. Now, you're sitting in your studio there. Like 100 people can't get through to you all at one time, and you can't answer them all at one time. The folk right there on the ground, I can look out my window. I see an NIE engineer. He spent the last 4 days around here looking for a fault, which he hasn't found. We have been out without electricity on the farm since Friday morning. We have two generators going. Fortunate enough, we had a generator on the go.
Tell you what, whoever's selling generators at the moment must be a good business at the moment.
You just can't get them. I rang in to Plan Higher Place on Friday morning. I got the last one, fortunate enough. And in hindsight, I should have had that plan in advance.
Look,
I should have.
Look, I'm talking here. I'm not having a pop at Stormont. I'm really not. But I do wonder if there is a learning here. In terms of, we know now through the Nolan Show this morning that we're waiting for 300 generators to come across the water to us, right?
Yes.
There are going to be disasters in the future again. Should we have a stockpile of these things more than... NIE told us that they've deployed 150 of them. Well, we know they need at least 450, at least three times that, because they're trying to get 300 over here.
Look, Stephen...
Should we have a stockpile of this? Our government have a stockpile of it?
You cannot afford to buy everything that will cover 100% of things. Now, we are looking out at the country. There are trees snapped that have stood for years and years and years. Like, you have to walk down... As I said, 70 trees were down along the motorway alone.
Yeah.
I have Leylandi trees at the bottom of my farm, the whole row of them. There are two left. They have all gone. I can look up the road and see the same. We have had storms that we have never seen before. The force of them, you cannot cover 100% of things, but you can't afford it. But you have to deal with the situation you see in front of you. Mm-hmm. You were on several times, you quizzed why people didn't come from England before they came. England had to wait to see what hit first, as in Northern Ireland electricity. Had to sit on Friday that morning and wait till the red warning was passed before they dealt with what was in front of them. And you cannot expect people to have come from England before they had dealt with their own. I would give them credit that yesterday morning there was I saw photographs, a whole stream of them sitting waiting to go on the boat. Now, if that sitting waiting to go on that boat and we had another storm and they couldn't get across, what do you expect to do? They're not going to jump the water. You have to deal with what's ahead of you. And that's what I'm saying. You know, we will all look at it in hindsight and said we should have done that and whatever.
And then Minister Given telling us this morning on this programme that here we were in Northern Ireland getting battered by the weather, and the Secretary of State and no one from the British government contacted Stormont and said, listen, what do you need? We're ready. It was the Stormont executive that had to contact them.
Well, I don't doubt there are MPs that should have got off their backside on things before.
They did. I'm talking about it was the local politicians, to be fair to them, reached out to the British government and said, here's what we need. They didn't phone Northern Ireland. Why was Hilary Benn not on the phone within seconds saying, what can we do? Barry, thank you. Good morning. Joyce and Newton Orange. Then we're going to talk to Pauline Shepherd, Chief Executive of the Independent Health and Care Provision Sector, just to ascertain what's happening within care homes in Northern Ireland. Joyce and Newton Orange, I know you're worried about your elderly husband, Joyce.
Yes, and I'm cold and waiting for knee operations myself. We're just... We've got no power, obviously, so we've no heat, no light, no nothing. The heat is the worst thing not to be able to have. But I couldn't get your program this morning, but on the wee portable. But my friend rang and said that they had generators, and I rang their help number or their.
This is NIE you're talking
number.
About.
Yes, NIE, unfortunately, and you get the same message. You know, it's a fault. Your fault has been noted. I think I have probably had my fault noted about 100 times since Friday. Now, on Friday, they did send out a young man. My son rang from Scotland, and they sent a young man out on Friday afternoon who was extremely helpful. He went and got us hot food and got me some batteries.
This was NIE? Torches.
Yes.
Oh, that's really lovely of him, wasn't it?
Which was really lovely of him.
Lovely.
I really appreciated that. And he knocked the door about 2 hours later and handed me over two already filled hot water bottles. And we thought, that's wonderful. And we went to bed and we were nice and warm.
Do you know that young man's name?
I haven't heard from them since. Yes, I do. His name is David Murphy.
Well, David Murphy, thank you. You know, we often criticise individuals. There's David going well beyond anything that he's required to do as part of his employment. It's not just lovely of him.
I thought that was great. I just wish I'd like to have seen him on Saturday and Sunday and maybe today. My power's not going to be on until... I really don't know when, because one minute I'm told the 30th and then I'm told the 3rd of February. Yeah. And I wish that by that time I... We'll both have pneumonia. It's so cold and wet and damp as well, which doesn't help matters much.
And your husband, tell me about your husband, Joyce.
Well, he was in hospital for over 6 weeks at the end of last year. And he's still recuperating, and he's not well. He's not really able to get around awfully well. And he's on blood thinners and things, so he's absolutely freezing cold. I can't get heat into him. He's walked up. He's in about 3 or 4 different layers of clothes and everything he can put on him. But I mean, he's just sitting miserable. There's nothing to do, no, and he can't drive or anything at the moment. And as I say, I'm not far off him. I'm the same. I'm waiting for a knee operation, and ever felt that you're just done and finished, and that's it? You know,
oh no,
that's
no,
the sort of feeling this gives you.
No, don't be saying that to me.
Could you have you any idea where you can ring to get your name down for one of those generators?
That they're supposed
to be doing.
Well, what they have said, it was me they said it to, Joyce.
Right.
So it was the operations manager for NIE. Saying that they had ordered another. It's why I've been asking the question, why do we not have a stockpile of these here?
So exactly.
They are waiting on another 300 to arrive in Northern mm-hmm. Ireland, and they've ordered them. Mm-hmm. And they were saying that they have 1,500 people on the vulnerable list identified.
Yeah.
Now, are you and your husband, is your home registered as a vulnerable home?
I haven't a clue.
Okay.
My son has been in correspondence with them from Scotland, backwards and forwards, and it was he who, through him phoning, he actually obviously started the thing going where this young man called at the house. So I don't know whether they would class us as vulnerable or not.
So when it gets to 6, 7 o'clock at night and the light falls... How are you moving about your home?
Well, I have wee pop-up lamps that I bought, fortunately, last year. Because out at Lockeridge, we're used to having power cuts because the service is particularly bad at Lockeridge power place. And they're not too bad. They just eat batteries, but they're not too bad. But I'm always terrified. You know, you can't see what's under your feet. You're frightened to fall.
Mm-hmm.
We have an old dog, and he doesn't know whether he's coming or going because of the dark. Mm-hmm. He's not used to the dark and the silence.
And Joyce, are any of your neighbours helping?
Well, our neighbours are not far off us, to be honest. Now, we have a neighbour down on the corner who's of the lane, who's been over twice, but we're all in and around the same vintage.
Yeah. Okay.
And
you're wondering how long this is going to go on for.
Yeah.
And you're wondering what support you can be given.
Yeah. If we could just have some way of being warm, to be honest. Food comes secondary to being warm. But I mean, I'm trying to boil water in a saucepan on the ring and then try and make a cup of tea or a cup of coffee. It's not easy to cook. Now, I did cook last night. I cooked a bit of chicken breast, the stuff last night on a pan, and it wasn't too bad. But, tonight I haven't a clue. We'll just tea and coffee and biscuits during the day, and that's what it's going to be.
I can't open my freezers
because I have two freezers, and heaven knows I hate the thought of what's going to be in them whenever the power comes back on again.
I don't know if you've realised how profound it is what you've said this morning. You said that heat comes before food, and mm-hmm. for anyone that is thinking that this situation has been just an inconvenience to them, I think you're conveying this morning how life-threatening this situation still is as we speak.
Yeah.
Is the executive having, I'm genuinely asking the team this because I'm just back in the work from America, is the executive having daily emergency meetings? Are they doing that? We'll try to find out. Communication and support for our vulnerable, and you and your husband certainly sound like one of them. Like two of them. Joyce, listen, thank you so much for phoning us. Please don't say that you're finished. You're not.
Well, you just feel like that sometimes, you know.
Yeah, but you're not. You're not. And you'll get through this. And I know that's easy
yes,
for me
course.
To say. Thank you, Joyce, for trusting
thank you very
us.
Much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Pauline Shepherd, Chief Executive of the Independent Health and Care Providers. Good morning to you, Pauline.
Good morning, Stephen.
You know, that last call summed up why we're leading on how the vulnerable being supported. It's extraordinary, actually.
Yeah. It's extraordinary, and I mean, heartbreaking. I mean, we all know that there are vulnerable people in the community who are not on the radar of social care, who don't get care packages to their own homes, who don't get the calls. So there's lots of unmet need in Northern Ireland, and we really do need to start addressing the social care and looking after people that are vulnerable. I mean, families aren't around as much as they would have been years ago, and that lady's example of her neighbours are elderly and maybe not able as well. So, you know, we need to be identifying those people. And if anything, this storm and this crisis has highlighted how many vulnerable people there are out there. And I would also, I mean, I'd take the opportunity just, Stephen, before you ask me any further questions, to pay tribute particularly to the social care workforce who went out, took risks on Friday to try and get to all of the people that they had on their lists to visit. It's been a really difficult time for both home care, the domiciliary care services, and care homes.
100%. Look, you think of the, you know, we were all being told to stay in if we can on Friday. Mm-hmm. You think about the healthcare workers, the nurses, the porters, the people going into our mm-hmm. hospitals who were continuing to provide that service, the workers on the ground, the police, the fire service, the, you know, I'm going to cock up here because I'm mentioning some people and not others, but you get what I'm saying. The public sector workers who aren't big earners, who are going out into the middle of this, NIE staff, to try to help us.
That's exactly right. NI Water, I mean, all of those, and, you know, it is easy to, you know, to point the finger and say, well, you know, they should have been prepared or whatever. You know, the gentleman that was on earlier said we will never have enough funding and enough equipment, technology or whatever to deal with those extreme crises that happen, such as the weather. So, you know, the infrastructure in Northern Ireland has been neglected. Electricity, water, all of those things. So we will never be, you know, sort of 100% ready for any, you know, a weather event like this again.
But I've just all of these things whizzing around my mind. And again, maybe this has all been talked about. But has anybody, has Stormont coordinated or has anybody coordinated, for example, there must be people in Northern Ireland, farmers and builders and contractors and companies who have generators they don't need. Has there been any initiative to try to pull together generators so that they could be rented or hired or lent to vulnerable homes?
I can only speak, I mean, I've been gathering feedback all weekend from care homes and from home care domiciliary care providers. Care homes do have contingency plans in place in terms of, you know, they have generators or their emergency plan, they will have access to generators. So, I mean, people in care homes have been kept warm, have been fed. There may be problems with, you know, with just staff because staff couldn't get to work or whatever on Friday, but they're safe, they're warm, they're well looked after. People in the community, you know, they will have their care packages, they will have people calling. Those carers will be in contact with family, friends to try and, you know, help whatever way they can. So they're actually the lucky ones. And you're right, I'm concerned about the vulnerable people who are not on the lists for care packages, who are maybe, you know, they don't get a warm meal, they aren't looked after, but, you know, for proper hydration and things like that. And that's what I talk about in terms of social care. As an ageing population in Northern Ireland, we will have increasing need going forward, and we need to start looking at how are we going to care for frail elderly people. And it's not just elderly. We have lots of vulnerable people at lots of ages who also need to be identified and cared for.
Pauline, thank you very much indeed. Thank you, Dan Armstrong, UUP MLA. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning. It's a desperate situation, and I'm sure lots of people are contacting you.
Absolutely, Stephen. I've stayed at my office in Enniskillen today and have calls coming in here. But firstly, thank you for your programme has played a really important role this morning in highlighting all the issues that are current. It's absolutely bitterly cold outside here. I've been out around the district this weekend with severe damage, and it's just my house, like many others, I won't be getting connection to the 3rd of February. The house is getting increasingly cold. I've heard the testaments this morning, particularly what Joyce is saying. We have vulnerable families and elderly people here in houses that are increasingly cold through having no power supply, absolutely no connectivity.
I'm really worried about them. I really am.
Well, thank you for what you're doing, because I think people, the statutory agencies will be listening, the MLAs will be listening. I think it's a really important role. But I would appeal to the general public, think of your neighbours, check on them, please. Let's get this community spirit going, because there's a lot of good things happening out there, like David Murphy from NIE. We have to get through this. This is a once-in-a-lifetime storm. There may be increasing storms in years ahead, but we need to deal with what is coming here right now.
My mind is just hypothesising about someone that maybe has a little battery radio, and they're sitting at the moment, and they know tonight is going to be pitch dark and freezing, and they're being told that the 3rd of February it might go on till then, and that is a long time, especially for those people that are elderly, especially for babies, and. You know, are we able to do anything more to urgently, should we be getting blankets out to those people? I don't know what we should be doing. But
at the moment, the community centres are the leisure centres are open. But yes, I agree with you. In rural Fermanagh and South Tyrone, we have elderly families who cannot come into those leisure centres. So I think the imperative is get generators out there. That is an action that needs to be taken. When generators are hired and returned, to get them back out into the community where they are vitally needed.
Dana, thank you. Alan Stout, Chair of the BMA. Alan, is there a heart concern to you that vulnerable people will get ill over the coming days because of this?
They will do, Stephen. I think that's inevitable. I'm sitting in my surgery now, and I'm actually, as I was listening to your previous conversations, I was checking our own house call list today, and we have a number of elderly patients, in fact, ones over 90, that we are going out to visit today, who've been presenting to us with various symptoms, possibly not caused by the storm itself, but absolutely going to be worsened, by the cold and the lack of electricity and so on. So, I mean, it's inevitably going to have quite a significant health impact, particularly on those most vulnerable.
How quickly can the cold temperatures, as they are now, kick into having a significant effect on someone's health? Or is it likely it won't?
Well, it varies from person to person. Again, if somebody is unwell, and particularly if somebody has some sort of viral infection at the moment, the advice is keep indoors, keep warm, keep hydrated, and so on. And so whenever, electricity is a problem, whenever water supply is a problem, you clearly can't follow that guidance. And so the impact on their current health, but also on their recovery, can be quite significant. But like so many things, Stephen, it affects two groups of people the most. One is the elderly and the most vulnerable that we know about. And also, when we throw in health inequalities into the mix, we know that people who have resource can mitigate and can help themselves. People who don't are the ones that will struggle the most.
I guess this is what I'm trying to get a practical answer to. If someone knows that they're in the vulnerable category and, for example, they have an infection of some description, that they were already sick, and should they be getting themselves into a community centre or some type of community setting where they at least know they're going to be warm, or should they be staying at home? How vital is it for them to get heat into them if they're already ill?
Yeah, again, it'll vary from person to person. And what you don't want is people going into these community centres with a lot of other vulnerable people and spreading infection, because that can obviously make things considerably worse. I would advise, it's going to be individual circumstances. I would advise people who are concerned, to take advice. And this is, again, as I think Diane Armstrong mentioned it, it shows the vulnerability of our system, that, we are running so close to capacity all of the time. And whenever you get a problem and a crisis, it becomes really, really difficult then to respond appropriately.
Alan, thank you. Anya McGee from Carers NI. Anya, how concerned do we need to be? What more can we as a community do?
Thank you very much, Stephen. I think I'd just like to echo a lot of the comments that have been made by previous callers. But what I will say is that whilst the storm was a major event for all of Northern Ireland, I think the vulnerable elderly and those with disabilities will have been disproportionately impacted. And that means that they won't have power to heat their homes. They use a higher level of energy because of their health conditions. So, for example, they might need electric hoists, stair lifts, oxygen, dialysis, lighting requirements, and they need to do more washing and drying of bed clothes. These groups are at home an awful lot more, and they need more heat so that it doesn't exacerbate their very, very, very serious conditions.
So what is happening to those people who aren't getting, they can't get the heat, the electric's off?
Well, exactly. It's a really, really tricky situation, and I'm really, really pleased to hear that the Northern Ireland Executive have requested, did you say 200 or 300 generators?
300.
300.
Sorry, NIE have ordered 300 more generators, and they're currently in the process of coming from across the water to here.
Well, we hopefully they get here soon, because I know that carers have been in touch with us and they've had to actually leave their houses and go to a relative's house and just cause untold disruption.
I'm a radio presenter. I don't run anything. I don't have the authority to do it. But is anybody asking the public or anybody setting up a facility where spare generators could be pooled together so we can all help each other? If farmers want to do that, if local businesses have a generator they don't currently need, is anybody pulling them together?
Not that I'm aware of, Stephen, but then centrally that information might be held within the Northern Ireland Executive or within the other frontline services. But it's clear at the moment that Storm Eowyn has not affected everyone on an equal basis, that carers particularly, because they rely on so much heating, so much more heating, yeah, to heat their homes because of the ill person that they care for, that just disproportionately impacts their lives and who they care for. They can't even turn on a light. Anya, they can't even...
We're going to have to leave it there, but thank you very much indeed, Anya McGee from Carers NI. Thank you, Anya. NIO are reminding you that their contact centre number is 03457-NIE, 03457-643-643, or through their social media. Thank you for your company today. I hope you're okay, and we'll be back tomorrow morning at 9. Here comes Connor.
The biggest show in the country. Listen again on BBC Sounds. Tweet at Stephen Nolan.
Yoga is more than just exercise. It's the spiritual practice that millions swear by. And in 2017, Miranda, a university tutor from London, joins a yoga school that promises profound transformation.
It felt a really safe and welcoming space. After the yoga classes, I felt amazing.
But soon, that calm, welcoming atmosphere leads to something far darker, a journey that leads to allegations of grooming, trafficking and exploitation across international borders.
I don't have my passport, I don't have my phone, I don't have my bank cards, I have nothing.
The passport being taken, the being in a house and not feeling like they can leave.
World of Secrets is where untold stories are unveiled and hidden realities are exposed. In this new series, we're confronting the dark side of the wellness industry, where the hope of a spiritual breakthrough gives way to disturbing accusations.
You just get sucked in so gradually, and it's done so skillfully that you don't realise.
And it's like the secret that's there. I wanted to believe that, you know, that whatever they were doing, even if it seemed gross to me, was for some spiritual reason that I couldn't yet understand.
Revealing the hidden secrets of a global yoga network.
I feel that I have no other choice. The only thing I can do is to speak about this and to put my reputation and everything else on the line. I want truth and justice. And for other people to not be hurt, for things to be different in the future.
To bring it into the light and almost alchemize some of that evil stuff that went on and take back the power.
World of Secrets, Season 6, The Bad Guru. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.